Hello, and welcome to At Your End Step. My name is Morgan, and I'm here with Mike.
Hello.
And Dave.
You faked me out there. You acted like you were going to me first.
For some reason, I couldn't start with you. I don't know why.
Definitely tougher Wapner.
I know where I stand on the totem pole.
I did. I had a weird Rain Man moment there where it's like, I just couldn't start with the D. Sorry.
But he could finish with it.
Oh, yeah.
And that's what's important.
Exactly. So, we have another exciting episode here.
Oh, you forgot to say hi to Jordan. Oh, wait.
Oh, Jordan's not here. Oh. He is sick. So, hey, I'm not exactly feeling 100% right now either. But
you know what that means, right?
Oh, we can talk about spoilers.
Yeah!
We're very excited about spoilers.
All of them spoilers.
So, but there wasn't really that much in the community that happened, so we're going to talk a little bit about competitive. Just because there's a couple of GPs, and then we also had the Open that happened. And then we're going to go to F15 spoilers, and then we actually have like a PTQ that we're planning on going to. And then we'll have our closing and everything like that. So, you guys ready to go into competitive?
Let's do it.
Sweet. So we obviously had a open and
an open, excuse me,
and it was.
I want you to know, I just told aside, but we walked into Dave's house yesterday, and his wife had put a little note on this like dry erase board. And it was like, "Welcome to this family." It was just the last name. It was like, I don't know, like welcome Jeffs or something like that, right? But instead of like just like Jeff's plural, there was enough for an apostrophe. And the first thing I walked into his house, it was like, "Is that supposed to be possessive?" And he's like, "No, just erase the damn apostrophe." It's a disease. I don't know what to tell you.
Yeah. Well,
it's a blessing and a curse.
When you go to college,
they say with great power.
When you go to college for it, I imagine that it probably just sticks with you throughout.
It does.
You paid a lot of money to be an asshole.
No, I don't.
I said, no, you paid a lot of money to be an asshole.
I thought you said you get paid a lot of money.
No, I would never make that mistake. So Nye Hexproof 1, it was in Providence, by the way, just in case you didn't know. Nye Hexproof 1.
No, it was in Portland.
Oh, Portland, excuse me. Providence, Portland.
Opposite side of the country.
I'll cut that out in post. So Nye Hexproof, we haven't actually seen the deck in a while. It's sort of been borderline. It got better with Mana Confluence. But it's still, it was obviously very draw dependent. But it looks like this guy just probably ran hot and got there in the end.
Yeah, it's a solid deck. I mean, it won Ohio State's here. And I know that Brian DeMars wrote an article about it. He finished, I think, top 16 at GP Chicago
mm-hmm.
with it. So, I mean, it's out there.
Yeah, most certainly. I mean, it's not something that, it's not your typical blue-white, which, doesn't actually show up in the top 8, right? No, it's not in the top 8 at all. Yeah, I mean, we have, like, Junk and, not Junk, Bantz, excuse me, in the top 16. But I think that's the most control-y deck that we find, which is pretty pretty interesting to see Blue-White and Esper kind of fall off and Bantz kind of show up in a lot more amounts.
Yeah, it's sort of awkward. So the Bantz deck against, the Hexproof deck matches up even worse. Because you end up, playing more slots for, Kiora, which can't target the Hexproof guys. So it's just well, that's interesting. So, and less verdicts overall is just good for the Hexproof player. So, I still think this deck is, amazing. But it definitely is the right deck. If you pick it at the right time, you can just do this and just be like, oh, by the way, I took down the tournament.
Yeah,
so.
I mean, it's very similar to how Bantz Hexproof was. At some point in time, you can just be like, well, this is a weakness in the meta, and I'm just going to exploit it and take down an open. Yeah. And then we have, our typical Mono Black Devotion and Mono Blue, and those are the other decks that pretty much fill out. Interesting enough, we have Josh Rabbits, who played green black in Columbus, shows up here playing mono blue. So he's just like, well, clearly this is just the next best deck in the format. Yeah. So. I mean,
that's another deck that gains a lot by there being less verdicts in the format, because it's blue white's pretty good against that deck, and when there's no blue white, then obviously that deck gets a lot better.
Oh yeah, most certainly. And I mean, the standard top 8 it's not very exciting. I mean, obviously, we're kind of getting into that area, like we usually say around this time, where standard is just, kind of not necessarily solved, but you're going to see the regular things show up in top 16.
Yeah,
you're not going to be surprised very often.
You're not going to see much innovation at this point.
Yeah, because there's no reason to. Like, you know, you have Mono Black. Mono Black is a good deck. If you just, you know, crank out games with Mono Black, learn how to play it, learn how to sideboard, you can probably do decently well. And then you, like, you can't metagame for everything, so you're going to, like, have to make sacrifices. You're going to have to give up some matchups that are just unwinnable. And do your best, and then, like, just hope you get, you know, get the right set of variants.
That's, you know, that's something that I talked a lot of people about, Dave, after the GP, and we talked a little bit last week about sometimes your cards just don't match up. And to further that point, I was just looking at this. So, you know, we have, again, Robert Hunsaker is the one who wins with Naya Hexproof. There's three copies of Mono Black in the top eight, and across them, there's 11 copies of Devour Flesh, which,
right.
Hunsaker did not play a single Mono Black deck in the top eight. He played Mono Black aggro the first round and then played Mono Blue. So he actually, despite there being three Mono Blacks and a million Devour Fleshes, he did have to play against a single one.
Yeah.
So just based on the seedings and the decks that he played against, you know, it's like, oh man, this might be a good choice. But in all honesty, had he been seeded across like one of the Mono Black players in the first round of the top eight, then you may not, you know, it's just like, oh, Mono Black wins again. So it does feel like this format now, there's so many different decks that can happen, but like so many of the decks just like, you know, kick the other ones in the teeth that it's interesting to see how like, even like how that set up, how it's just like, oh man, you won through three top, you know, three Mono Black decks. Well, actually,
not really.
You didn't play against any of them.
When you look at the actual bracket.
Yeah. Right, it's just something interesting to point out.
It's food for thought. I mean, like obviously, I think a lot of people might even like overplan for Hexproof after this. Like seeing it win, you might see an uptick in things like Devour Flesh show up, which may or may not be correct. So that'll be kind of be interesting to see going forward and what happens. Something I'm definitely considering is actually picking up Mono Black because I have access to it online, which will be, you know, nice to actually grind out games and then, you know, just have something a little bit more stable than Naya, Brave Naya, which has been on and off, and we'll see what happens. But I like Mono Black. I have all the cards. Why not?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's clearly the best deck in the format right now. But it's not so dominant that, you know, you see it win every single week, though. It does feel like that sometimes.
You always see it.
Like, yeah, there's always at least like top 16. Yeah.
And you always see some variation of it, which, you know, that's pretty much what I want. Yeah, I think something that's a little bit more dependable.
Yeah, I think it's interesting that people are all moving back to the straight Mono Black now because you saw black green kind of pick up like,
and
after
I think it's just pure, like, I think it's you probably have to give it up because of like burn and like probably taking two damage from things like Overgrown Tomb, and like I think that you probably have to do that there and just like consistently playing things on time.
Yeah, I think you saw Owen Turtlemole was the first one who just played the straight swamps and Mutavaults, and that's it. No Skylands,
four
yeah.
Mutavaults.
And, you know, people are going to see that and be like, oh, you must be right. It's Owen freaking Turtlemole.
Oh, yeah. And I like the division between Nightveil Spectre and Lightbane Zombie. Mm-hmm. Like, seeing how that always shakes out and things like that. So
that's about the most interesting thing that's happened.
Yeah, I mean, that's where I remember, like, you know, like, they were talking about, Patrick Sullivan was talking about one of his articles earlier this year, was, like, talking about how he got really tired of like, well, Mono Blue won again, and let's see here, they played two Cyclonic Rifts and only one Rapid Hybridization. What an interesting decision. It's like, it's the worst thing in the world to have to talk about.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I mean, here we are.
Well, it's a little bit more now because you have almost the full standard. I mean, we have M15 and that's it. And the next thing that happens is rotation. So
right.
I think I don't know. I think the format's, you know, and it always feels like it is. Like I myself, like, I don't know, like standard's fine, but I don't really want to play it anymore. Like right now, like,
yeah.
M15 has a lot of sweet cards coming out, and like, and that's interesting to me. But like the giant standard has never really interested me as much as smaller standard, because like giant standard, like a lot of cards just get forgotten, whereas smaller or forgotten, I should say, forgotten. Like you forget.
You forget.
But then like in smaller standard, then certain cards come out and, you know, and shine, which is nice. But I don't know. I'm very excited for this to finally go away for a little while. Like, okay, let's get out of your Mono Blue, Mono Black.
I want to say big ups to Ben Warshauer. He was the one, he finished third with Mono Black Devotion. He was 15 years old. Yeah. He was pretty impressive. I saw him play a couple matches.
He's way better than me. And I am more than 10 years older than him.
If there's any argument for why Pack Rat's a good card, yeah, even 15-year-olds be killing people with it.
Well, I think it's always interesting when you see young players do well like that, because it's like, if they stay with it, you know, where are they going to be in, you know, 5 years? 6 years, so
yeah.
We'll see. Maybe that's a name to watch.
I mean, don't they follow the same path all Magic players follow? They play really hard until they get into college, and then college sort of picks up, and they quit the game for a while.
They sell
and,
all their stuff.
Yeah, but then they get back into the game, and then eventually they get married, and they get out of the game again. And
all right, well, let's go ahead and take a look at something that you know, we're all super excited to talk about, GPDC, mainly because. Dave, you know the winner, sort of, kind of. Yes. Used to play back in You used to play with him back in your Massachusetts days, eh?
Yeah, Siggy, Mike Segrist. So, congrats, buddy. Yeah, he was kind of with the you know, group of people I used to hang out with back in Massachusetts. We're in a clan called the Ghetto on Modo. And
you shouldn't be so proud of that. You shouldn't be so proud of that.
Yeah, it's fine. That's what it was called. I didn't make up a name. But, yeah, I mean, this is his second top eight of the year. He also top eighted in Richmond. And that was Modern, and he's showing that, you know, he can play Limited as well. But, you know, a lot of people might not know the name, but he's been playing forever. He's a really good player. He's playing multiple Pro Tours.
Like I say, he beat Yuya Watanabe to win in the finals thing after he was down a game. So kudos to him, because that's an impressive feat. I don't care who you are.
Yeah. No, I mean, the top eight was pretty good. I mean, you had Huey making his eighth top eight of the season.
Just for no reason.
Just like, yeah. Just like, he just shows up. He's like,
he just wanted $1,000. That's what he wanted. He's just like, I need $1,000.
I can't blame him. Yeah. I want $1,000.
Christian Calcano,
yeah.
So maybe he'll stop having to, like go down to zero money his account and, like, have weird, like, interesting sob story articles for him to get to events. Like, maybe he can actually afford to go to some now because he's almost platinum.
Yeah. He's a grinder.
There's a great article about him about it being like, he's like the definition of grinder, because he literally will be like, well, I have no money. Who wants to pay for me to get to this GP?
Yeah.
Yeah. And I honestly don't think that Mike was actually too upset to do some rare drafting, because let's see, in his sideboard we have Whelming Wave, Fairies, Bear of the Heavens. Yeah. Okay. All right. Sweet.
I honestly,
he also had a Shipbreaker Kraken. Yeah, rare drafted. All right. Sweet.
I honestly didn't even know that he even made top eight until my buddy texted me. He was like, "Oh, by the way, Siggy won the GP." I was like, "Oh, I didn't even know he was doing well."
Interesting.
That's how much I paid.
Yeah, I sent it in group chat. I was like, "Hey, isn't that the guy you talked to at Richmond?"
Yeah,
I thought he looked familiar. Yep. So yeah, I mean, it's nice when you see people that you play with succeed. We've kind of experienced that with our Mike, so it's nice.
It's called riding coattails, and
he used to play a lot back in the day, and then he actually moved to Vegas at one point to just be a professional poker player. So I mean, he has experience with, you know, multiple card games, and usually being good at Magic usually translates pretty well to poker and vice versa. So. Again, I mean, I'm not surprised that he won it, but definitely not looking forward to the not so humble brags, because he's definitely not one to hold back on that. So
you're trying to say he may not be as modest as some people?
Yeah, there's been multiple Facebook posts already. So
fair enough. Fair enough. I mean, like, he's earned it.
No, absolutely. I'm happy for him.
His deck was sweet, by the way.
He had
a bunch of, like, good blue red cards. He also had a Crone Conscriptor and, like, triple Nyxborn Rollicker, but also, like, Triton Cavalry. So he could just, like, bestow and then bounce and then bestow on the Crone Conscriptor. Like, and he also had Hour of Need, which, like, is just always first pick. Well, that card is insane.
I mean, he had probably two of the best uncommons in the set with Mogus Warhound and then Hour of Need.
I totally agree. What's funny is, Dave, you put that in your cube, and I was, like, singing its praises to my wife when I was drafting. I'm like, oh, by the way, this card's insane. And, like, so she saw it, and she's like,
drafted.
And she drafted that whole deck. That card's unreal. So,
yeah.
Yeah, and then even something like a Crone Conscriptor can be huge.
That's a bomb. That's better than most of the rares in Born of the Gods.
Yeah. So I really like the blue red strategy. I think it's something that is even a little bit underdrafted.
It's underdrafted, and honestly, a lot of the pros sort of poo poo on it. Really, so you know, when you're sitting at a table with Yuya Watanabe and you know, Huey Jensen, you could probably just get this in draft and not even have to worry that much about it.
And like, it got so much better with the Journey into Nyx. Because I agree that when Born of the Gods came out, the color combination was not that
just
good.
Just red is really, really good, but it's weak in the other packs. So you can hit up the insane blue in Journey, but you can also start cutting red heavy enough that if you can just be the red drafter in Born of the Gods, this deck is actually just unreal.
Right, yeah.
So
I definitely agree. And I wonder how well Storm Chaser Chimera did for him.
I mean, it's a lot like, what was the bird from Innistrad that you could... put into the graveyard.
Mind Shrieker.
Yeah, Mind Shrieker. It's all like Mind Shrieker, but you actually get to scry as well, so you're just like, we don't want this card in the top of our library. Let's get out of here.
Yeah. But yeah, definitely interesting. I like taking away a draft deck. I like watching, that's my favorite part, is actually watching people draft. I don't like watching the matches, but like watching them.
The matches are miserable to watch.
Watching people draft, though. That's like my favorite thing. Like with Channel Fireball, those are draft videos. I like watching the first two videos, and I just don't give a shit.
Why? So you can listen to The Sun from Breaking Bad talk about draft picks?
I don't know if it's specifically you're referencing.
I mean, that's Matt Sperling. I mean, that's all that guy sounds like. I mean, like
I didn't know who you were talking about.
I'm not kidding. Like, listen to Matt Sperling and listen to The Sun from Breaking Bad. And it's the same guy.
We'll have to do audio audio.
And honestly, like I don't even feel bad making that comparison because Matt Sperling shits on everyone's face. Probably literally, too, for all I know. So
I don't want to experience that, so... Oh, and congratulations to Charles Leek for being like the most hipsterest hipster. I could identify my own kind.
They were in Portland. Oh no, this wasn't in Portland.
You can identify your own.
I was going back to the.
But Morgan, he has so much hair.
Maybe flew in. Hipsters like beards.
Oh, you're trying to make a bold joke. I see. Mike was trying to make fun of my unfortunate genetics that are causing me to lose my hair. It's sad.
No one feels bad.
I'm not saying anyone feels bad. It happens. Male pattern baldness. It's a thing. Science, fix it. Jesus.
It's 2014.
Wait, who are you appealing to? Jesus or science? It's got to be one or the other, buddy.
Someone's got to be listening, right? Whoever gets there first.
What about science, Jesus?
Bill Nye? Nah, he won't fix it.
He's got better things to do. Like
clearly.
Pick out his bow tie.
Yeah.
All right. So that was, you know, limited. And then we also have Grand Prix Milan, which is also limited, but won by Jeremy Dazzani, who overtakes Reduke as the leader in the top 25.
By how many points does he overtake Reduke?
1 point.
Yeah, that's the heat pretty insane. Is on. It almost looked like he was falling off a little bit there. And then, you know, he just shows up to just remind everybody, oh, yeah, I'm still around.
I really thought he was, like, making Alicia Keys, like, joke there, like, Jeremy Dazzani's on fire!
No, I'm not going to do all that. So, I just want to take a look and see what he had. You said that you're talking about someone else. All right. So, it looks like he actually just got the blue-white... deck.
He had a really good aggressive deck.
Yeah, it looks like it. We do have some like clunkers like Satessa Griffin showing up, but it looks like. So he has God Favored General on here now. That's an interesting card. I don't know how I feel about that card in general, but I've lost to it a couple times drafting online, and it feels real bad when you lose to it. It's the 1/1 for one and a white when you. Inspire it, you can tap two and a white and make 2/1s.
2/1s, yep.
He actually, that thing did some work. I was watching the finals a little bit.
And it feels like if you can get in with it once, like it's probably done its job. And if you could make it evasive somehow.
So I will say this, he also had some interesting interactions like the Elite Skirmisher, which has heroic tap something. So there are, like, actual board states where you can just be like, oh, well, I'll tap this for value.
Right.
And untap it. Oh, and also a Crone Mastiff.
Exactly. So I think like if you can combo that together, then that ends up like just being an engine on its own, which is pretty sweet. Maybe the card, like, I feel like when Born came out, that card was just, like, undraftable, but maybe now that we have some more enablers, I think it could even be pretty good in something like White-Black, if you have Grisly Transformation or something like that.
Yeah, something to get, let it get in. Card's interesting. It is cool to see how Draenix has sort of made Born of the Gods a little bit more palatable, because Born of the Gods Theros was not nearly as fun to draft as the full format is.
I wouldn't know. I've drafted the full block like once.
The full block's actually a really fun draft format. Like,
it is.
Like Triple Theros was like okay, and then Born Theros was really like frustrating. But like the full set like really feels like some sets you're like they add the third set and you're like, oh, this is kinda clunky, but this one felt like they add the third set and all of a sudden the whole puzzle made sense. It's like yeah. Oh, okay, this is cool.
I think that's what they go for.
Well, it's been a while since they've done that. Really, yeah. I mean, like, you had Avacyn being a full set after the Innistrad Dark Ascension, and then you had, like, these, you know, you had the, didn't really combine, you know, Ravnica until you had Dragon's Maze, so you didn't really have that weird middle format, you just had two different formats. Right. So, they actually haven't done this in a little while, it feels good, it's fun to draft.
Oh, yeah, I completely agree. And, I mean, the top eight here even has some notable names, especially in, obviously, in the European side of the MTG realm, with Nico Boni and Evenflock.
Evenflock, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, showing
like,
up.
Jazani has just been on such a heater. Like, that guy, I agree. Like, feels like he came out of nowhere, like, and all of a sudden just, like, storming everything.
Yeah. I mean, that's... He really came out of nowhere at Proto Theros.
Right.
And I didn't even know who he was.
But all of a sudden, like, since then, it's just been, like, finish after finish of just, like... Just really well. So
I mean, sometimes you just get on a heater, and we've seen it plenty of times with other players. So it's not surprising, and it's honestly exciting to see someone come out of nowhere and then like just do amazingly well and have a really recognizable name. So yeah congrats to Jeremy Dazani.
Yeah, you had a couple other big names also. You had Marcio Carvalho,
yeah,
Portuguese player. He's pretty good. He's been around for a while, and Timothy Simonot, who was on the French national team that won the World Magic Cup last year.
Mm-hmm.
Those guys both top eight, and you had Frank Carson finishing 10th. So he was written it in
so close.
Up until the end.
So close. But yeah, that was GP Milan. So, you know, two limited GPs over the weekend. So, you know, unfortunately not very many exciting deck lists that we can share, but congratulations to players, and congratulations to the players that also won the Open and top eight and everything like that. I mean, that's, in all honesty, pretty much what we have for the competitive segment. Let's go ahead and we'll move into the spoilers. And this is actually pretty exciting because we're actually recording pretty late, so we have some brand, you know, hot off the presses, 18-minute-old spoilers that we want to talk about.
The new sliver.
Okay, so yeah, so we have this on Facebook. We looked it up. We haven't been to Daily MTG or anything like that.
I am right now, actually.
Oh, sweet. Okay, so... we actually have the new 5-color sliver, because who couldn't have guessed that it was going to be a 5-color sliver? Let's be fair. Sliver Hive Lord. So white, blue, black, red, and green. It's converted mana cost is 5. It's a 5/5. Sliver creatures you control have indestructible.
So does that bother either of you? Like, I know that we're talking about a new card, but like I think this is a real first. Like, so... Under the old phrasing, before they fixed indestructible, was that sliver creatures you control are indestructible.
Right.
But now, because it's an ability, they have indestructible.
Exactly.
Which is, I don't know, it's just weird to me.
It sounds weird, but, I mean...
It's almost a flavor fail. It's like if they are indestructible.
Yeah, I think
the art looks sweet.
This sliver seems pretty powerful.
Yeah, I mean, you can get all 5 colors.
I mean, this is something that, obviously, people who... have sliver decks or have, you know, sliver queen EDH decks, stuff like that. Want. Right.
Yeah, I don't think this is even at this like all having, you know, indestructible. I still don't think this is probably constructed playable. Like every sliver deck that's ever like seen constructed play, like Legacy, Modern, they tend to just only play the aggressive creatures. Like a 5-drop, regardless of how good the mana is, it's still rough. But as like if you're playing Sliver Commander, like this probably, like depending on how you're playing it, like maybe better than just a Sliver Queen anyways, because you just cast this and be like, okay, cool, well, you ain't doing shit.
Oh yeah,
he's indestructible.
It has indestructible.
I really want to get this altered now. Like disturbed all around it. Like can we just like have it wearing a disturbed T-shirt? Like Sliver Overlord with the disturbed T-shirts. Sliver Hive Lord is getting down with the sickness.
Well, that's why you have the plague sliver, right?
Yes.
You're welcome, Internet. Oh boy. And then the second spoiler we have is actually a common, but I think it's pretty interesting. Yeah,
it's pretty spicy.
So Generator Servant,
Cube.
One in a red, and it is a 2/1, and it has tap. Sacrifice Generator Servant, add 2 mana to your mana pool, colorless mana. If that mana is spent on a creature, that creature gains haste until end of turn.
Like, I like this card a lot.
I think it's pretty interesting.
I mean, like, I think of, like, the red decks that would, like, already want a 2-1 attacker, but, like, the red decks, like, I'm thinking, like, even back in Mirrodin when you had the 4-drops like Koth or, like, Hero of Oxidridge where there's these 4-drops where sometimes your really aggressive deck can't always get there, but now your 2-drop helps you cast your 4-drop on turn 2, or on turn 3, I mean. Like, that's pretty unreal. So, yeah, red doesn't normally get this effect, at least not for a long time.
And it gains haste? This is a creature?
Yeah.
I think that's pretty good. Like, think about all the things that you can just, you know, kind of accelerate into, especially when the mana is still pretty good right now. And I mean, it's probably like a magical Christmas land, but it is an interesting space that they're exploring in design.
I think it fits the theme of the set, where it's just like a card that is very interesting and it makes you think about, what can I do with this?
Yeah,
what 4-drop?
This feels so refreshing. And you and I had a lot, David, we had a big conversation about this, but like how you had said that design is has been so dictated by the block format. Like, oh, well, only the interesting cards have to have, like, I think look at cards like a Master of Waves, which is like, well, look, it's Devotion, but it's really obvious what you have to do with it. And even going back to the set before that, something that sticks out to me is like Simic Manipulator. It was a card with Evolve that you could take creatures. It's like, I get what you're doing, but no. But like, these cards are intriguing on their own, where it's like, go play. Go do what you were going
to
do.
Yeah, I think this set's a real throwback to some of the older sets that kind of just had good standalone cards or good like build around, you know, kind of cards. So.
Yeah, I really agree. Like, I'm really excited for this set. Like,
yeah, this is the best core set, honestly, maybe ever. I don't know. It's up there.
Has Jennifer Lawrence ever won a core set? Because that one might be the best ever.
I think out of since they have been called...
It's a corset joke.
I get it. I understand. since they have been like MX corsets... it's probably the best one of those since like M10 going forward.
I mean, if this is what we're gonna keep doing with core sets, I'm all in. Like,
100%, yeah. If we're gonna start getting like, I mean, we have what, 2 gold cards in this set, which is the first time that's ever happened.
Also true,
because we had Nicobolas once, but yeah, we actually have like.
And they're still keeping them out at, you know, at the mythic rarity. Like, they still don't want like newer players to be like, you know, because in my mind, gold cards have always made the most sense out of any of the quote unquote advanced mechanics. But like, I still like, they're like, well, we're just going to make sure that you don't see too many of these just yet because it's confusing. And, you know, here's a warm glass of milk. You go to bed now.
So obviously, we have some other spoilers to talk about. First thing, I think we all want to talk about the Planeswalkers, right?
Indeed. I hear they do a lot of dueling in this set.
Yes, apparently. Well, one of them mainly, to be fair. So we have 6 in this core set, which is something that...
we have them once before with Bolas.
With Nicobolas, so sort of the same setup as M13 had. The first one... I guess let's talk about the first two that are actually reprints, which is Liliana Vess. So the original Liliana from Lorwyn is actually coming back. It's a playable black planeswalker.
I mean, I think Liliana Vess is fine, and yeah. Repeatable tutors are dangerous. I mean, even at 5 mana, repeatable tutors are dangerous. Like, you look at mono black right now, where it's like, you know, they get to points in the game where it's just like, well, if they just draw the Grave Merchant here, they win. Well, how about I'm going to draw Grave Merchants for the next 2 turns? So. Good luck.
Deal with that, yeah. I think this is a perfectly serviceable reprint. I mean, they didn't try to mess around to be like, let's try to make a new Liliana. There's like, this one works.
I mean, I think honestly, like, and I know people probably didn't want it in Standard again so soon, but I think Liliana of the Veil would have made a lot more sense here.
Flavor-wise
would have made a lot more 100%, sense.
But it would be broken as shit.
I disagree with that. It wasn't that good in Santa the first time.
Broken as shit.
Broken as shit.
Really? Yeah.
Yes.
I disagree entirely.
100%.
The aggressive rednecks are good enough to make Liliana just not very good in this format. Like, she would be very good in Mono Black for a few months, but then they would have to find a deck for her. They tried 2 years to find a deck for her in Standard, and she was never dominant.
I mean, I don't disagree with that statement, but for, but like...
That was a different format, though.
I agree, but then, so assuming it's going to be broken now when you don't know what the format is, seems a little strange.
I think it would be very hard for Wizards to be like, okay, for the next 3 months, Mono Black. And then afterwards, yeah, sure, you'll have the fun of X, but, like, next three months...
They gave Infect Rancor. I mean, they've done things.
But even then, that was still, like, a sort of a pseudo-glass cannon deck. But, like, if you give Mono Black the consistency that, like, Liliana of the Veil provides, I think...
I mean, Liliana of the Veil wasn't even in a format where Heroes Downfall existed before. Like, I don't know. Or Dreadborn, for that matter. Like, yeah. I don't know. I don't think it would have been that
I think... And it's also like what the community perceives as well. Like they would have seen that powerful reprint, and that's they would have just driven towards that anyway. So it's not like
Red screwed again,
right?
Yeah, exactly.
And then we have so Liliana Vest probably will see some play, maybe one of in Mono Black.
I mean, Liliana Vest also has an ultimate that just wins the game by itself.
I agree.
So
especially if you have Grey Merchants,
yeah, you think. Especially if you also have Grey Merchants.
Value Town. I'm on the train.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of a boring reprint, but given what's all the other cards that are in the set that are sweet, it's okay. I can forgive that.
At least it's not Liliana of the Dark Realms again.
Jesus.
Yeah.
Christ.
Yes,
hey, you guys ready to search for more swamps?
Like I said, playable Black Planeswalker. Good. And Chandra Pyromaster is making her comeback.
I'm glad to see Chandra get another go-round.
Yeah, because that's a good red Planeswalker. So.
Yeah, I think this is a really balanced Planeswalker. It's seen play. It hasn't dominated or anything like that, but, I mean, this is...
Speak for yourself.
might have, won a couple opens or something like that.
Yeah, but... I'm happy to see it. It even sees some modern play, too.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I think the zero ability, it's nice to see red get a different effect and for them to just not discard it and be like, let's keep going with this. So I'm sad that it doesn't look like the Phoenix is coming to join her this time.
Probably not.
Which is a little upsetting, but it's okay.
Could get something else, who knows?
Yeah.
So the new Planeswalkers. Ooh, exciting. We have four new Planeswalkers.
Fancy.
So we have a new Ajani Steadfast. No comma. Just a Johnny Steadfast, as if that's his new last name.
It is.
He's no longer Goldmane. He's a Johnny Steadfast.
What I actually like, so if you want to take it with that, is that they could technically, like, a Planeswalker could just, like, become a different person on every plane. So, like, what's your name? I'm a Johnny Steadfast. Oh, sounds cool, doesn't it? Picked it up myself.
And wait, did Vengeant didn't have a comma either? So it's just
nope. He was Johnny Vengeant then. Now he's Johnny Steadfast.
He's a Johnny Vengeant.
Are we sure that Johnny doesn't have like multiple personality disorder?
Like he doesn't even have like a scar.
Sometimes
he doesn't have like an eye scar.
Be red. Sometimes he wants to be green.
Well, sometimes
you
want.
He's just all white. You know.
And there's an Almond Joy joke in there. I don't know. Sometimes you feel like a nut. Sometimes you don't. All right. Thank you, Johnny.
Johnny Joyce have nuts. there's no Planeswalker that sounds like Mounds. I'm sorry.
Nope. Sorry. So Johnny Steadfast, reasonably splashable, 3 and a white. So 4 converted mana cost. All right, sounds good. Starts off at 4. All right, that's acceptable. +1 until end of turn. Target creature gets
up to one. It's
up to one creature. Yeah. So it's +1/+1. First strike, vigilance, and lifelink. So helps a creature be a decent attacker, similar to the jump that Call of the Pride gave. Sure. All right, makes sense. -2, put a 1/1 counter on all creatures you control, and then put a loyalty counter on all Planeswalkers. All other Planeswalkers.
Oh, man, if it was all Planeswalkers, or oh, by the way, this one costs 1.
Yeah, that'd be broken. Yeah, all other Planeswalkers you control, so... Okay, all right. So this is the first instance we have of like a card being able to ramp a Planeswalker up. And then -7 is you get an emblem that basically if any damage would be dealt to you, reduce it to 1.
Or a Planeswalker you control.
Or a Planeswalker, okay.
reduce all but one of that damage. So it's important to know that, like, if you attack with, like, five guys, right, then it will still be five total damage.
Right.
So, it's a really powerful effect, but it's also sort of, it's definitely, you can play around it if it happens. I mean, granted, if you let a Johnny ultimate, you probably just lose the game anyways, but.
Yeah.
I really like this Johnny. I when I say really like, I have to clarify, like, I don't think it's going to, like, break any format up or anything else, but I feel like this is, and I keep referring back to these mythical conversations that Dave and I have had, but we hung out a lot this last week.
I don't know what you're talking about.
Well, we talked about, like, the idea about planeswalkers being, like, we talked about this one specifically, but being, like, balanced for, like, for themselves. They aren't just, like, you still get an Elspeth, right, who's just, like, is just good. But, like, you, most of these planeswalkers, like, this fits a Johnny's character. Mm-hmm. Note that a Johnny Steadfast is wearing Elspeth's cloak, which is insane.
Yeah. So, I mean, just, you know, you should probably already know why that happens. If you don't, then you should probably just read a bit.
Yeah, spoiler alert, Elspeth's dead.
Oh, okay, we're just going to go there. Sorry if we...
Wizards released a video that showed it. Like, what do you want me to tell you?
That's true.
But, like, so... It was funny, somebody mentioned how this one reads more like a Mentor of Heroes than Mentor of Heroes.
I was about to say that. Like, he's pretty much a better mentor than a Mentor of Heroes.
But, like, it's meant to be splashable to play with other planeswalkers.
Yeah, this is a... it's really kind of funny how sometimes you have planeswalkers that fit into, like, RPG roles.
Yeah,
so,
right.
Like, a Johnny is, like, the support, so he's, like, buffing all your guys, and that's what he does. And that's kind of what he's done since the gold main.
Right.
When you look back at that card, like, he just buffs all your guys. And so, yeah, I like this a Johnny. It's a support planeswalker.
The only one that didn't was Johnny Vengeance.
Right, right. But he was so angry.
He was
the best one.
He was really pissed off.
When he's angry, it gets better.
Yeah, so, like, what's interesting, so people said this one doesn't protect itself, but it's important to note that the plus one still gives a creature vigilance.
Yeah.
So, like, and lifelink, though, which I think is actually unreal, because, like, it buys you so much time to make his abilities work.
Yeah, I was just going to say that. Like, it definitely helps in, like, a race situation where you can, like, you know, if you have a decent-sized body in play, you know, say if you have a 3-3, okay, now you have a 4-4 vigilant first strike
lifelink.
So that can, you know, it's almost like it protects itself. Now, again, like you were just saying, he's kind of like a helper, so he does need other things to make it work. But, yeah, I mean, I don't know. I think I'm with you, Mike. It's not, like, going to break formats or anything like that. It's definitely an interesting card, and we'll see how it plays. I mean, I think... off the top of my head, I think existing decks, I'm thinking like the Naya Planeswalkers deck that plays like Xenagos. And Elspeth.
Like,
you know.
Yeah, I'm going to make tokens with this one, right?
And then make a bigger
one. I would like Xenagos to actively tick up, but I'd rather make Satyrs. Oh, I can buff my Satyrs and tick up my Xenagos?
Yeah.
Seems fine. And I also want to mention and maybe this would be a good segue into another Planeswalker, but if you look at something like Jace the Living Guild Pact, whose ultimate is Serious Business, and also actually starts fairly close to its ultimate, then a Johnny actually comes down and screws up ultimate math really hard. Like, it's just like, if you think, oh, I have a turn, like, I'm going to attack you this turn because I have one more turn so you can ultimate, and you just, like, windmill slam a Johnny and ultimate,
That is actually relevant, yeah. That's like,
100%.
So go ahead, Morgan. I'll let you introduce also Jace.
So, obviously, Jace, the Living Guild Pack. Also, spoiler, if you didn't read any of the Ravnica novels, Jace became the Guild Pack.
He can also still leave the plane, and the Guild Pack still works. We don't...
I don't know. Doug Beyer, what
Wizards,
are you doing?
The Wizards literally just gets to go, yeah, we said so.
Who cares?
The art is sweet, too. You have the tablet in the back, tablet of the guilds.
Yeah, this is awesome.
So, he's same casting cost as Architect of Thought, and Mind Sculptor, which is 2 blue.
Therefore,
he has a very similar minus to Jason Mind Sculptor, which is bounce.
This one's a little actually non-land better, though. Permanent. Non-land permanent.
That's pretty good. It's -3. He starts off at 5. +1. Look at the top two cards. Put one of them in the graveyard. So you don't.
You get to draw a card. So people were trying to, like, figure out where this is at. This is like, this isn't as good as Scry 2, but it's better than Scry 1.
Like, Scry 1.5.
Yes.
And then, as Mike did bring up, his ultimate is each player shuffles his or her hand and graveyard into his or her library. You draw 7 cards.
Finally, like, every single one of his effects for the most part have been, like, reciprocal. Symmetrical is better. Yeah. And, like, and not this one. It's like, nope, you don't have a hand or a graveyard. Which, if you've mentioned that graveyards being relevant may be a thing, like, you don't have either of these things. And I have seven cards.
And is plus one is also something make where it's like, oh, is the graveyard relevant? Maybe. Because I want to put this in the graveyard and it means something. Underwhelming is the first thing that comes to my mind based on current format. Out of all the other Jaces, I mean, Jace has a lot to live up to, let's be fair. But I don't know what this card does.
I'm kind of with you that when I first saw this card, I was with you on that. But I think the one thing that, and I know you never want to judge a Planeswalker on its ultimate, but the fact that it starts at 5.
And ticks up to 6.
And ultimate's at 8. So you really only need a couple turns to make this thing go ultimate. And if you do get that off, you're pretty much going to win the game. I don't see how you
can do this. I don't know. Yeah, it would be very difficult for your opponent to recover from. Like, you'd have to brick off so hard in the 7 that you draw.
Right. But, I mean, I think even just the bounce effect is really good. I mean, it can get you out of, you know, a lot of tight situations. So this one, I think it's a little hard to evaluate and probably, you know, require playing with it a little bit before.
Yeah, I think there's some tension when you see this card. I think if I had this card cast against me, if I was playing any sort of creature-based deck, then there's some tension here because it's like this card's going to do almost nothing for a few turns. Do I devote any resources to it? Mm-hmm. And the second that you do, you know, if Jace reads, you know, for a control deck, you know, 4 mana, filter two draws, you know what I mean, or like filter and bounce, and then like gain 5 life, gain 6 life, then is it worth it? Like, and I'm not saying that's automatically good or not, but I definitely feel like it puts some interesting tension on your opponent. Whereas, like, I think this Jace and also Architect of Thought, you know, where it had like the little mini factor fiction, like they've done a good job with these last two Jaces of making it very much like you as the control player are in a much better position. Or you as the player casting Jace are in a much better position with your knowledge than your opponent is. So you know, whatever decision they make just very easily could be the wrong decision based on what you planned on doing, and it just works well for you. So, like, I'm not saying it's good, but I don't know. Like, underpowered maybe, but definitely, I don't know. Again, like, I hate to keep using Morgan's word interesting here, but, like, there's something interesting here. There's something, you know, definitely playable here.
Yeah, I don't think it's as good as Architect.
No, I agree with that.
But, you know, we'll see. You know, maybe post. I don't think it'll see any play before rotation, but we'll see what happens with cons once this.
So, Nissa, World Waker, new green planeswalker. She's not as bad as Nissa Zendikar. She's actually probably not bad at all, I don't think. So, three green for a 3 loyalty planeswalker. So, 5. 5 mana planeswalkers are always kind of weird. They kind of need to do a little bit more than your typical planeswalker. So plus 1. Target land you control becomes a 4/4 creature.
Elemental creature with trample. And it's still a land. There's no until end of turn clause here.
It's just there. It's always a creature. Plus 1. Untap up to 4 forests.
4 target forests, yes.
Okay. Up to 4 target forests. So she always goes up. All right. So any planeswalker, so this is very similar to like a Johnny, where it's just like 2 pluses.
She starts at 3, so
that's kind of awkward. I mean, still out of like lightning strike range, which is
no,
kind of
it's
where
good,
you want.
It's good.
Yeah,
for
and
that.
Then minus 7. Search your library for any number of
land cards.
Basic land cards.
No, yeah, basic land cards. You're right.
Put them into the battlefield. Was it tapped?
Nope.
Then shuffle your library.
Yeah, these lands become, what, 4-4?
4-4 is a trample.
Yeah, shuffle your library. Still lands. So I figured this is probably what was going to happen, that they would shift Nissa into be like the ramp planeswalker.
Yeah, like Garrick's like the creature green
exactly.
Planeswalker.
Like
that makes sense.
They so focus heavily on him making tokens and like interacting with creatures that they would probably like take his Wild Speaker untapping lands ability and shift it to another green planeswalker. Nissa seems a perfect fit for it. Just because her being elf centric was not good. It's too niche.
Too Nietzsche.
Are you trying to make a...
I don't know if I'm making a Nisa joke or a Nietzsche joke. I don't know which one I'm doing.
A Nietzsche joke?
Tika's your league. I don't know.
It's bad. I don't think she's bad. I think that, like, her abilities seem like they could be powerful. I don't think, like, there's necessarily home for her right now, but it's nice to see a ramp planeswalker be back in the format.
I agree. I don't like... So, it comes down at 5, and then when you plus 1, it doesn't protect itself, because, like, you have to play it on 6 to have a land that protects itself. And then it opens up your lands to removal spells and Supreme Verdict and, like, Wrath of God effects, which is... a little rough. Untapping 4 target forest is a big game. Like, if you are, like, if you have 4 forests in play, and like, you play this for 5, but it costs you actually 1. Yeah. Like, you're like, if you're just like, Nisa, and untap, play Polychronos, here go. Like, that probably feels pretty good, but I don't know. I was, out of all these planeswalkers, including the reprints, this is the one I was very, very, like, eh, about.
I agree. I think this is bad, to be honest. I wanted it to be good. When I first read it, I thought it just said untap up to 4 target lands, and I was like, oh man, this thing is sick. Mono Green Devotion with Nykthos, you know, you do some crazy stuff with it. As it is, I mean, you pretty much have to play it in a mono green deck, and I don't know,
I think that if there is time for this one, it's still when Shocklands are in play, but I don't know if it'll make it.
Right, yeah, even then, I don't think it makes it that much better. With that, I mean, it's just like, I was gonna make the same point that Mike did, where, I mean, you have to basically play it on 6 in order for it to protect itself. So, I don't know. 5 mana, starts on 3 loyalty. I think it's a little too niche, as you said.
Like the last one.
It's
a little bit wider than the last one, so...
Yeah, but...
I agree. Having to play a lot of force, but I think, like, a ramp deck is probably gonna play a lot of force when it comes down to it. So
we'll see. I don't think it's playable, but we'll see. I'm ready to be proven wrong.
No, I mean, in honesty, like, someone has to find a place for this where it's relevant. Someone has to find, a place for that planeswalker to be like, okay, I want to do this. This is going to be something that is going to help me in my game. And I don't know if that exists right now. So
based on the current state of ramp, where, like, the only, like, ramp growth effect you have is an enchantment. You know what I mean? So your ramp is going to be your Elvish Mystics, your Sylvan Caryatids, like,
and those just don't get interacted.
Well,
with
ramping Nyssa. Into Nyssa Worldwaker, so you can turn your land into a creature, and then getting Verdict, so that all your mana rep creatures and your land is now dead.
Yeah, exactly.
Feels miserable.
Yeah, like if Nyssa came along with, like, a ramp growth effect,
it'd be at least more interesting.
Yeah, which isn't, like, going to happen. Like, I should say rampant growth, specifically. Right. but since we have Sylvan Caryatid, they wouldn't do that.
Yeah, I mean, at least for right now, if you're going to play a Green Devotion deck, I think the big Garrick that's already in Standard is better.
I agree, too. Deck, yeah, so. he gives you far more, card advantage. Speaking of Garrick, we have a new one of him, and he ain't looking so good, guys. He's a little touched.
Okay, I'm sorry.
He will.
How much does he look like Bane from the terrible Batman and Robin movie? He's got, like, the veins and stuff going and everything.
I mean, clearly that's going to be an alter now.
I was waiting for Jace to come around and, like, pull little tubes out of his back and, like...
So we have Garrick, Apex Predator, 5. Black green, so 7 converted mana cost. Steep.
How many other planeswalkers were converted mana cost of 7? Just one. And he was Karn.
He was Karn. 7 colors, though. That's very important.
Whatever.
So he starts off at 5. All right. Yeah, that's fine. Plus 1, destroy another target planeswalker. Fuck you, planeswalkers. Get the fuck out of here.
And my axe is pretty much what he says.
Right.
Bitch slap, target Jace.
Plus 1.
I'll pull the tubes out of my back.
plus 1. Put a 3/3. Is it black and green?
No, just black. Just black beast.
Just a black
beast. These tokens are going to look insane, by the way. I can't wait to see those. 3/3 black beast with Death Touch.
With Death Touch. All right.
Get it? So you get the Death Touch wolf, but the 3/3 beast, and they just mashed them together. It's like, that sounds a little...
I'm sorry.
Yeah.
That was just my fist in my hand. Sorry.
That's what Garrick said.
-3. Destroy target creature. You gain life equal to its toughness. So wait. So we have a +1, a +1, a -3. Oh, we still have one more ability. four abilities.
Woo.
Minus eight. Target player gets an emblem that
says... Target opponent, excuse me.
Gets an emblem that says, whenever a creature attacks you, it gets plus five, and trample.
Yeah, so I like... Until end of turn. The flavor here is that he's actually cursing you, yeah. Which is interesting. Like Curse of Predation times five.
Right, and I think a lot of people... So let's start with the ultimate. A lot of people thought the ultimate was kind of underwhelming, but you kind of look at it as the same situation that you have with Jace. Like, this comes down, and it goes up to six, and does a decent job at, like, probably protecting itself.
So if you make... If you were just able to plus it three times on ultimate, then you would have three boars who then would attack for 24 damage?
Right.
That sounds lethal to me.
With trample. Yeah.
Trample. Sounds lethal to me.
Doesn't sound like you're going to have a good time.
That's trample. Oh, God. Yeah. You only have to assign one damage. God. Yeah.
All right.
That's important.
Yeah, that's super important.
But we're talking seven mana here. Like, Karn didn't do much in standard.
You're right.
He does things in modern because of Tron. Can Apex Predator show up in standard? Is he just that powerful that people are going to try to get to him?
I really feel like destroying other target planeswalkers is still really powerful.
I mean,
like,
yeah,
really powerful.
People have already pointed out he comes down at the latest if you have him and you've been making your line drops right after someone plays Elspeth.
Yeah, it's very true. By the way, I made that point to you before we cast. I started casting.
But other people made that point before you.
But that's the truth. We talk about going over the top. Like, this is the definition of it. Like, oh, you're going to play Elspeth? Well, I'm going to play Garruk.
That's
I'm
cool.
going to kill Elspeth. And like we said before, like, Elspeth makes three tokens, and Garruk's at six loyalty, so it didn't even care. It's like, yeah, cool, yeah. Attack me for three.
Don't give no fucks.
I'll make a token next turn. Like, so I think destroying another target planeswalker is really, really important. Because if it didn't have that, I would say probably not close to playable.
Yeah.
But that means that you can destroy any creature or any planeswalker. So outside of an enchantment, which, don't get me wrong, very relevant card type right now, but outside of an enchantment or an artifact, it can come down and deal with whatever the biggest permanent on the board is.
Right.
Now, granted, Vraska could do that too, because that's the comparisons we made, is Vraska can actually come down and destroy anything too. You know, and actually destroy those enchantments and artifacts. Fair point.
But
Garruk does things the next turn, though.
And Vraska doesn't. The other relevant thing is that if you play Garruk onto an open board, like, it still does something.
Yeah, that's very true.
Yeah, Vraska, like,
literally does nothing.
It's a nice utility card, but it's almost just like playing a, you know, a Maelstrom Pulse or something.
Right.
It doesn't feel like a card that's just going to win you the game on its own, which it doesn't really.
Yeah, Garruk, though.
I think Garruk feels like, Garruk has the feel of a card that can win a game by itself, though. Like, destroying a creature and gaining life is super relevant as well. Like, all the abilities feel very relevant, and the card feels powerful. Seven mana is a big hoop to jump through, though.
I agree. Yeah,
I think seven mana is definitely attainable in standard right now. I don't think that's the main thing that's holding it back. But the problem I have with this card, and I really want it to be good, is that the best deck in the format plays four Thoughtseize and four Heroes Downfall.
That's fair. That's very fair.
And I don't know. I think at the most you're probably going to want to play one or two of these in a deck. And yeah, I mean, I can see it winning games, but I think the format's going to be pretty hostile towards new Garruk.
I would agree. I see it occupying the same space that Sylvan Bounty, or was it Primal Bounty, occupied this whole last format, where it shows up sometimes, and when it does show up, it's really, really good. Mm-hmm. But otherwise, yeah, it's definitely a very quick Thoughtseize target. Definitely a quick Hero's Downfall target, but at the same time, like, if you play your Planeswalker and kill their Planeswalker, or kill their creature and gain a bunch of life, and they still Hero's Downfall, then, like, you're still one for one-ing, so it's not like it's the worst thing in the world. Granted, you spent seven mana, so that's fair.
A little awkward. But yeah, I don't know. I really want this card to be good, because I want to play it. I think this card's awesome.
I do feel like if you enjoy playing Magic as a card game, I don't care like how you evaluate it. Like, if the pro player within you is like, man, really should probably look elsewhere, the little kid in you should be going, I want to play Garruk! I want to cast him every game! Like, that's what, it's like one of those old Mini Wheats commercials where it's
exactly
the sugar side. And the
but I mean, a four mana planeswalker. Like, I wasn't playing when Jace the Mind Sculptor was in standard. I've never had a chance to play with a four mana four ability planeswalker. So, like,
again, Garruk Relentless had five. Five.
Okay, so something you don't have to work for.
Yeah, he had five.
He did have five.
Not all at the same time.
So. Not all at the same time. Exactly.
So sorry, you had to jump through hoops to get your five different abilities.
Exactly.
God.
You did. It didn't feel like five. It felt like two and then, three.
Two and then three.
Two and then three. All right. So, Garrick, hopefully we'll see play. Hopefully, you know, I out of all the Planeswalker lineup, though, I don't think they did a bad job.
No, this feels fun. I don't feel like there's a true, like, I don't want to open an ESO, but I don't feel like I'm going to be like, you know, like, oh, man, here's Liliana of the Dark Realms.
That's exactly. Yeah.
Or honestly, at this point, like, oh, here's a Johnny Call of Pride again, like, or Jace Memory Adept again. Like, it's feel like they just decided to revamp all of it, and it feels really good.
Yeah, it does. So let's go ahead and move on to something a little bit more interesting. Perilous Vault. 4 mana, artifact. You pay 5 and you tap it, and you exile it, and then you exile all non-land permanents.
So notice that this is something that I thought was interesting about this. We just talked about Nissa, and Nissa is very obviously on Zendikar in her art. Mm-hmm. And Perilous Vault is very obviously in Zendikar. Like, it's a Zendikar monument. It says so in the flavor text. This is an interesting Wrath effect that destroys all non-land permanents. And seems actually to play pretty well with Nissa, where it's like, oh, look, I made a bunch of 4/4s. But we're not going to wrath the board for creatures, right? Because we're going to destroy all non-land permanents. And then, like, you just throw the middle finger to everyone else. Perilous Vault replaces our Day of Judgment or Wrath of God slot in this set.
Yeah, probably. I mean, it's a mythic, so that's a little awkward. But, I mean, we have... The only other thing that we have is, like, we have Mass Calcify at 7 as well. At 7,
yeah.
Yeah. Mm. And, I'm not shocked that they didn't print another, like, 4-mana... you know, rare Wrath spell, just because you can't have too many of those in Standard, in my opinion. I mean, and it could just be something where I think Mark Rosewater has stated that, like, the times of the 4-mana, you know, Wrath spell have maybe gone to the wayside, so they might be, looking at more 5-mana and 6-mana Wrath spells.
God, that feels awful.
I agree. I think that that's almost like a staple. Like, you almost need the 4-mana Wrath spell. But I don't know. I think there's room for other things to be printed. Like, what about Hollowed Burial? Like,
yeah, but I think if you're going to do that, then you have to have more effects like Anger in the Gods or Pyroclasm in the 4-mana. I think you have to diversify the way. Because otherwise, otherwise decks like Boss Sly just get to run around and like, oh, by the way, we're not going to play a game of Magic Pass turn 3. And you have no way to deal with 4 creatures on turn 2, or turn 3, or turn 3 and 4. It's like, I don't know. But this is interesting. I mean, like, we haven't seen an artifact like this in a while, because, like, you know, back in the day you had Disc, and then you had like
Oblivion Stone.
Mm-hmm. And, like, so we haven't seen something like this for a while, and this one's a little bit cleaner than Oblivion Stone. The Oblivion Stone had the option to save your own
things. It's just like, nope, no fucks given.
Yeah, I mean, I think in current Standard, I don't think this really slots into anything. Yeah, I think it's an interesting card for Mono Black because it allows Mono Black to deal with enchantments, which is kind of one of the weaknesses of that deck.
Yeah, you know, if he has any that out of their hands.
I don't think there's another deck that wants it, though. They're all either playing a lot of Planeswalkers, or maybe the blue-white decks that are very much all in on Planar Cleansing want this card.
Yeah. I mean, it's also awkward because you're probably not going to have the opportunity, unless you're playing something like blue-white that goes to the real late game, you're probably not going to have the opportunity to play this and pop it in the same turn. So you kind of leave it exposed for a turn, which, you know, kind of leaves you open to get blown out by any number of things.
Most of the things in the format that destroy enchantments also.
Well, that's where it's interesting, though, because Deicide is by far the best thing in the format of destroying enchantments. So now, once again, this card brings about some tension if you start seeing play, where it's like, man, I really want to play Deicide so I can get rid of these Thassas. Man, I should probably play Wear and Tear, though, so I can get rid of these Perilous Vaults.
Oh, right, or like Revoke Existence.
Right, exactly,
or something like that.
Exactly.
But, I mean, it's an interesting effect to have. Like you said, we haven't had one of these in a while. So, it's cool that they're printing it. I don't know how much play it'll see, but...
Yeah, but it is...
It's a kind of mythic, though, where if there was like a deck that stepped in playing 4 of these as its Wrath spell, that card could get a little frustrating to acquire.
I agree, yeah. If this is just like, okay, well, this is what we have to play. And
like, Verdict hit and stayed at $8 to $10 pretty much consistently for its whole Standard run. So if you have a mythic that's even half as ubiquitous as that, then it probably sits at $15 by itself, which is a little frustrating.
Most certainly. Ah, crap. I just said that. Rats. There's one, maybe more. I haven't been counting.
I've said it more than you this time, so.
Sweet. So let's move on to a pretty exciting reprint. Court of Calling. showing up again. Glad I bought those.
With some really terrible art, in my opinion. Dear Lord.
Yeah, I don't like... I mean, the original... I like the neon green bird. Yeah. The green eagle. If you don't know what Quarter Calling does, it's like an instant... It is an instant speed tutor with Convoke.
Which says your creatures can help cast this spell.
Let's do it together, guys. Yeah.
They have... I mean, come
on. Convoke. Convoke.
Come on. I feel like we need Jordan for that. He does it so well. I mean, I don't blame him for putting it like that.
I know. It's meant for new players. It's a core set. I get it. But like,
So you can...
Hey, look, Bob. My creatures can help me cast the spell.
Yet your slivers have indestructible.
Things are weird. Things are weird. Right. Anyway. Templating issues. You can, you know, basically pull out a creature from your deck, put it into play, costing X. Current mana cost of X. Yeah. If X or less. So, yeah, this is a modern staple in Pod.
This is an exciting reprint.
Sure. Could be something in Standard. I think...
Instant creature tutors that put things into play, it's just powerful. It's really powerful.
It's a very powerful effect. I think it works better in, like, toolbox formats. I don't know if we necessarily have that in Standard right now.
You could.
Yeah, you could.
You also have the Singing Bard, don't forget. I know we haven't talked about him yet, but
the one that
you tap it and you add a counter to it, and then you search your library for a card with a counter.
Oh, yeah, it's like you can play Pod and Standard.
Yeah!
Except you have a creature instead of an artifact.
Oh.
Except you don't really get to...
like a million.
I'm just saying, okay?
No, but I think they should reprint a Six Live. In Standard format.
So you can court for it?
Yeah. But I think Court of Calling is sweet, even just from making them more available, because it was like a $30
card. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, I mean, that's pretty sweet. Anything that makes Modern more accessible to players, I'm always in favor of. But I honestly do think this is going to be a Standard staple for as long as it's in the format. Like you said, I mean, instant speed, tutor effects that put creature directly into play, it's a powerful effect.
Yeah.
And I think... especially in conjunction with Corsair Crucifix, which you saw in block, just dominated.
Well, like you have setups where you already have Corsair and like Sylvan Caryatid. So like your deck is already set up to play some somewhat defensive creatures that are willing to be tapped, for mana and for Convoke.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Right. Yeah. So, I mean,
I'm looking at the constellation list, and in my mind, I'm like, man, how sweet it would be! Like, oh, you're attacking me with a bunch of Elspeth tokens, Court of Calling for my Doomic Giant.
Yeah.
Get fucked.
Speaking of Elspeth tokens, though, they can help you cast this.
They can help you cast this. Wow.
Seems pretty good.
Along with Raise the Alarm, which is coming back. So instant speed, play around in that and limited, please.
I think this is... I don't know. I agree with you. I don't know if there's a creature yet. Like, searching out like Apollo Kronos is sweet. You know what I mean? But it's also not like the most powerful thing in the world. But... just knowing that whenever, like, cards like this are, like, dangerous, like, when you look at things in older formats, like, Show and Tell or, like, Sneak Attack, where it's, like, the card always does the same thing. Like, it always, like, but the more creatures get printed, you know what I mean? Like, so you don't know what, like, other creatures might be put into Standard, where you're just like, ooh, you know what I mean? Like, Court of Calling for, like, a soul of some sort doesn't sound terrible in my mind. Like, I want this now.
How about this? But again, I mean... It's one of those things, like, anytime they make a good tutor effect, and it was kind of like this when Stoneforge Mystic was in the format, it's like anytime you have an effect like that, basically any other creature that they make, it's just like, okay, all right, oh, this goes in now, or this. So, I mean, they have to...
Yeah.
I wonder what I can do with this. Oh, God, I still have Court of Calling.
Yeah, the toolbox just gets bigger.
So, and then even just as a...
Yeah. Yeah, keep going.
I was going to say, just if we're just talking about toolbox creatures, you have another card in the same set, Reclamation Sage, which is the green and two colorless 2/1 enters the battlefield, destroy the target,
true.
Artifact or enchantment. That's the perfect example of a card that you would play. You know, it just has a one of in your deck.
Totally agreed.
The last thing I wanted to kind of touch on is Sign of Blood is coming back
to a theater near you,
and. Yeah, that card's going to slot right into Mono Black, and it's going to make it pretty good. So, watch out for that.
It's going to make it pretty good?
Well, it's going to make it still competitive, I think, in M15. Also, we didn't talk about this. Urborg, Tomb of Yawgmoth, is coming back as a reprint, which is nutty.
Sort of a really random one. But
super random one. It feels just like, well, we had Mutavault in the last set, so what do we do what do we do for here?
Urborg, all right, cool.
Urborg, all right.
Yeah, that's another one that was getting pretty pricey.
Yeah.
For modern.
Unfortunately, no corrupt.
No
corrupt.
Also, another weird set, Painlands. But only five. Only enemy color Painlands, actually. So if you have those from Apocalypse or, 10th edition?
10th edition.
Yep, 9th edition.
You can play those again.
Yeah, they printed twice in a row.
Yeah.
Oh, that's awful.
Congratulations. You have some standard playable cards now.
I think these are actually a big deal. I think a lot of people kind of like saw these like, sigh, you know.
I'm excited about them, but it's interesting to see like maybe what that hints at. So in cons, do we just get an allied set of
see,
dual
and, if you read Stodd's article, like it's heavily implied that they're still committed to making a full cycle in block format. So
weird.
Whatever it is, you'll probably get the full cycle, but then you'll awkwardly just have this. So yeah, I'm not quite sure what's going on there, but
well, I mean it gives certain decks just really awesome mana for a couple of months. I mean, like a black-white mid-range deck now has Caves of Koilos, you know, in addition
black
to...
Black-green has Llanowar Wastes.
Yep. So, maybe even big Boros, get some Battlefield Forges. Yeah.
I mean, it's definitely better than Gilgates.
Boros get Gilgate, yeah.
It's also better than Mana Confluence.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, being able to tap for colorless mana is huge.
So, I mean, they are... A little bit boring, but I like what they do for standard.
I agree.
At least, you know, temporarily for the next couple of months.
So, we just wanted to touch on one last thing before we get to the outro. Was that there's a Modern PTQ that we're all going to?
In
hopefully.
Toledo.
In
Ohio.
Toledo.
What? Toledo?
Toledo.
Oh, you come to spicy Toledo, Ohio.
Hey, they got chili up there, right?
Yeah. Skyline.
No, I don't know.
Is that
anyway,
more of a Cincinnati thing?
It's an Ohio thing.
Yeah, it's just an Ohio thing.
Sure.
But yeah, so Modern. I'm either going to be playing Jund or Pod. One of those two. Mike, what do you plan on bringing to the table?
So I talked about this. You know, honestly, as we're coming up in this 50 cast mark, I think I talked about this deck last Modern format. That I was brewing this mono-red devotion deck, and I chickened out at the last minute and couldn't figure out what to do with the deck. And, like it was good, but not good enough. And then, like, talked about it with some local people. Before it was Josh Hines, and that was Mike Moore. Some guys were talking with this, and actually may have set the deck up to be doing what I want to do. So I may be playing some mono-red devotion in Modern. Oh, maybe. I'm planning on it. I committed and actually bought 4 Boretusk Liege from Star City Games today, and God, I hope they make it by Sunday. I got the 2 to 3 day shipping, but July 4th is going to murk it all up, so it's either going to come Thursday or Saturday, or I'm going to get just totally boned. But I hope not, because I want to play this spicy, sweet deck.
I really hope you do.
Like, so I even have like, Dave's Blessing. I asked him the other night, I was like, alright, so are you going to talk me out of this one? And he's like, oh no, this deck's sweet.
Absolutely. I've seen what it can do. It's pretty insane.
I was goldfishing it and bonfired for 10 on turn 4, and attacked for lethal. I was like, yeah, that's what we're going to do all day. So,
it can happen.
I actually submitted a list, an article about it in a list to LegitMTG, so hopefully that'll go up this week. So if you're interested in what the list looks like, that'll be there. And I'll probably show up on the Wizards website when I eventually do win the PTQ. So.
Wow. That's called
ballsy.
Right there.
Look at that.
I'm really excited about this deck. Like, knowing my luck, though, like, there are some bad matchups, and I'll probably just play like, blue or red control three rounds in a row and just like, get kicked out of the tournament. So, but I'd much rather play against Pod 3 times in a row and watch people rip their decks in half. So,
yeah, it's not fun. It's no fun.
Man, I don't know the Great Rebel. Every time I cast that card feels like a mistake. That card's so freaking good. But that's what I'm going to be on, activating some Nykthoses on Sunday. How about you, Dave?
My deck is not as spicy as yours. I'm just going to play good old Blue-Red Delver, because I've been playing it for a while now, and I feel like I know it pretty well.
It's your kind of deck. It really is.
I don't think it's the best deck in the format. It definitely has its weaknesses, but I definitely feel comfortable playing it. And, yeah. It's That's what I have the cards for.
Unfortunately, even if we said that my deck was like, we should play this deck as a team, it'd be impossible because no one has six cards.
Not at all. Not even close.
Like, I've literally asked everybody and I had to go buy the leashes. Like, like, oh, man. But I think you've been good with your deck. The Blue Red Delver deck's done well for you, so.
Yeah. Except for when I'm getting game losses.
Well, yeah, you should probably show up.
Yeah.
That's a good
game. I mean, pointer. That's step one, right?
And I think Jordan, who's planning on going, is actually planning on jamming some Blue-Red Storm.
Yeah. Storm rinses people out.
Either I don't think he'll do that at all. Or good old Tron.
Yeah, that a Tron. So. Not a Tron, so.
Carding some people
so
out.
So, yeah, we decided this when he showed. He's like, I think this is why I'm going to build Modern. He showed us, like, Storm. And we're like, do you actually hate playing Magic? Like, every deck that you build for every format, it's like, well, I don't want my opponents to do anything. Like,
he plays Elves in Legacy, and then he tried to play a Devotion deck in Standard. So it's like, I don't want you to interact with me.
Yeah, this isn't even close to fun. Well, then he played Nihil Blitz for a long time in Standard, too. Like, he's just
that's
like,
true.
I don't want to play games of Magic. I just want to do my own thing. You leave me alone. I told him that's his introvert. Like, like that's where it is. It's just like it's actually coming out in your deck design now. Like, you just don't want to play decks where your opponent has even a chance to do anything.
Yeah, pretty much. But if you are in the Ohio area, definitely do a little bit of searching and try to find that PTQ in Toledo. I know it's on MTG Salvation in the events, so go ahead and check that out.
I will say the name of the store here. Checkmate Games and Hobbies is running it.
There you go.
In Toledo,
yeah.
So.
I don't know why I told you all you guys that because I really wanted it to be small because I don't think anyone really knows about it. So don't show up. Actually,
it's interesting. What you should show up to though is probably the one on Saturday in Columbus. So
yeah, go to that.
Comic
Town is having a GPT / IQ at their local store. You can check them out on. Their website, I think it's just comictown.net, and also they have a Facebook, so you can go to that as well. That's Central Columbus, so if you are a local listener, definitely check that out as well.
Go there, don't drive to Toledo. Sounds good.
Exactly. Yeah, you know, have a lazy Sunday and just have a busy Saturday. But yeah, I mean, that's pretty much it for the podcast. Please do check out our website. It's @yourendstep.com. We also have a Facebook, which is facebook.com/@yourendstep, and our Twitter, which is @yourendstep. And you can follow us on Twitter. Dave is
DNolan08.
And then I am Morg War Marshal. And then
I get it.
And Mike?
I am at Big Tears.
And then I forget what Jordan's in. It's like it's on the website.
I'm Jorman.
Because I don't know what the fuck that means. Anyway, I do want to thank our listeners as well for joining us for another episode of At Your Instep. We'll catch you next week and have a good one. Bye.